So good evening, everyone, and welcome again to Tushita, and welcome to this 10-day Introduction to Buddhism course. My name's Glenn Svensson, and together with Renato, we'll be leading this course. I'll be leading the classroom sessions, and Renato will be leading the meditation sessions. So what I thought would be nice to start with is some introduction. So I'll introduce myself, then Renato, and then I'll get each of you to briefly introduce yourselves. So as I said, my name's Glenn Svensson. I'm from Australia. I grew up in Australia. My previous profession was IT, so I worked in the computer field for about 10 or 12 years. And then I did my very first course in Buddhism right here 21 years ago. Then I went on to do some more courses in Kopan Monastery in Kathmandu. And then I did a 7-year study program, master's program in Buddhist philosophy in Italy. Finished that in 2004. I did some retreat after that. And for about the last 9 years, I've been mainly based here at Tushita, running these introduction courses and also intermediate courses and also meditation retreats. So I really very much enjoy running these courses here at Tushita because we have people coming from all around the world. I get a lot out of it. I think people get a lot out of it as well. So I'm very happy to be running this course again. So that's a little bit about me. So I'll pass you over to Renato.
Hello, everyone. My name is Renato. I'm from Austria. And I did my very first course also here in Tushita 4 years ago. And since then, Buddhism became a very big part of my life. And last year was after Tushita, the one to lead meditations here in the courses. So since 3 months, I'm here and enjoy it very much. And looking forward to the course.
Thank you, Renato.
Thank you.
Just a couple of logistics before I give a little brief introduction into this course. One thing that Kumpen mentioned to me that I think she didn't say was to stay in the same place for each session. Don't keep moving around, otherwise it gets very confusing. So you've got a place now, so stay in that place for the whole course. If you're sitting on a cushion and you start to get some knee problems and then you need to move to a chair, that's okay. But otherwise, stay in the same place the whole time and then it'll be much easier. Otherwise, often what happens is if you come in the door and someone's sitting on my place, we get a little bit upset. So just stay in the same place. Okay. The schedule, I think probably Kumpen has mentioned the schedule, but maybe I'd like to briefly go through the schedule again so we have it clear in our mind. So the schedule, of course, is posted on the door here and over at the office and in the dining room area. So this evening's just a little short introduction. And then tomorrow for the next 6 days, we have the same schedule. So the first session in the morning will be 6:45 with Renato, a meditation. So I think there'll be a wake-up gong at 6 o'clock and then again 10 minutes before every session, there'll be another gong. So 6:45 till 7:30, you'll be doing a meditation with Renato. Then there'll be breakfast at 7:30. 9 o'clock will be the first morning session with me, and that will go till 10:15. And then we'll just have a very short 10 or 15 minute break. Stretch your legs if you need to go to the toilet. And then 10:30 till 12 o'clock, the second morning session with me. 12 o'clock will be lunch till 2 o'clock. And then 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock each day, we'll be breaking up into small groups and discussing the material that we've been talking about in class that day. How we break up into groups, I'll talk about that tomorrow. So the discussion group will be from 2 till 3. Then 3 o'clock is afternoon tea break for half an hour. And then 3:30 until 5, there'll be the afternoon teaching session here with me. And then at 5 o'clock again, another tea break, 30 minutes. And then at 5:30 till 6:15, you'll be doing a meditation with Renato in here. Then 6:15 will be dinner time. And then in the evening, there'll be an evening session at 7:30, a meditation session with Renato again. So three meditation sessions and three teaching sessions, one discussion group per day. And then on day 8 and 9, the last 2 full days of the retreat, of the course, will be only meditation, so we'll be just meditating throughout the day. I'll be leading some of those meditation sessions as well, and I'll talk about the structure of those days a little bit later in the course. And then the last morning of the course, again, a meditation with Renata before breakfast. Then after breakfast, I'll do a little wrap-up session with a little bit of advice about where to go from here. And then also Kumpen will be giving a session as well about other study programs and other things that you can go to after this as well. And we'll be finishing at 12 o'clock, picnic lunch, and that'll be the end of the course. So that's basically, very briefly, the schedule. Now, the course materials, hopefully everyone should have a red booklet and a piece of paper. If anyone doesn't have, put your hand up, and Renato's got some spare ones. He can pass them out to you now. So just keep your hand up. If you haven't got one, he'll bring it round to you. So this booklet, we're more or less going to be following the same structure as this booklet. And so what I plan to do at the end of every day is to give you the pages that we'll be covering the next day in class. So if you want to prepare a little bit for class, you can read from this book. So we'll be more or less following the same structure as this booklet. You also would have got a little free book at the check-in. So you can read that also, of course. There's some very nice simple things in those books. Also, maybe Kumpen has mentioned there's a number of books on the table over there that you can also take and read during the course. So the book you got to check in is yours to keep. If you want to read one of those books, then by all means you can take it and read it. But don't just leave it in your room if you're not reading it. Bring it back if you're not reading it. And over here, of course, there's magazines. And in particular, probably Kumpen's mentioned here, there's a number of glossaries, some little folders here with terminology in a number of different languages. So if you're not sure about some of the words I'm using, then you may find a translation of those in, I think, Hebrew and I think French and Spanish and German as well, and probably one or two other languages. So there's some folders there so you can look at those. So that's the course material. Now, how to approach these 10 days, just a couple of pieces of advice. First is relax. Because often in our modern society, we have this idea, this sort of striving, that, and we often get very tight and tense when we're striving for something. Now, there's probably going to be a lot of new concepts that I'll introduce in the coming days that probably you're not familiar with. So if you have the expectation that you'll be able to understand everything easily, you're probably just going to get a little bit frustrated. So rather, stay relaxed. Whatever you pick up in this course, be happy with that. And then the next time you read about it or follow another course, you'll pick up a little bit more. So some of these topics you're probably going to need to listen to and read about many times before you get a very clear understanding. So whatever you can pick up is good. What you don't, that's okay. Next time, you'll pick up a little bit more. And in general, we can talk about developing what's called 3 types of wisdom. And the first type of wisdom is what's called the wisdom arisen from hearing. As it's easy to understand, there is that we just listen to some explanation, we understand something. And this also, of course, implies from reading a book. So a piece of advice about this during the course is any time I'm explaining something and you're not sure what I'm saying, maybe my accent or some of the words, or you didn't understand what I said, please ask questions. I really like to be very interactive. But for asking questions, 2 things. First, don't just ask the question, put your hand up And then often I'll acknowledge that you want to ask a question, but I'll continue on and finish the point that I was making, and then I'll get you to ask your question. And also, the second thing with asking questions is please keep your questions to the topic that we are currently discussing. Because there are, of course, there are many interesting questions about Buddhism, but if it's not about the topic we're currently covering, then probably what I'm going to say, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. So keep your questions to the topic, otherwise we get very sidetracked a lot. So this is the wisdom from hearing. And then we have the wisdom from contemplation, where we think about what we hear or read. So here, the piece of advice is, please do not blindly accept anything I tell you. In fact, we can follow the Buddha's advice, his own advice on this point. The Buddha himself said, please don't accept what I tell you merely out of devotion to me. Rather, you need to be like a goldsmith who checks and tests the quality of the gold before accepting it. So likewise here, please don't accept anything I tell you blindly without thinking about it, because it won't help you. So you need to think about what I say and see whether it makes sense to you and whether it can be of some benefit. And then you can accept it if it sounds reasonable and logical and useful. Otherwise, blindly accepting things won't help at all. Also, with contemplation, modern studies have shown that if we don't think about the things we hear or read within 24 hours, we forget 75% of everything we hear. So therefore, we don't want that to happen. So what we're going to do, of course, is every day at 2 o'clock, we're going to do discussion groups where you can discuss the points that we have covered in the previous day. Also, I'm going to, every morning at 9 o'clock, I'm going to start with a short review of the things we did the previous day. So then hopefully we won't forget 75% of everything we've heard. Now, these two wisdoms together can help us to get a good intellectual understanding about something. And this is generally what we do in our school days in education. We listen to the teacher or the lecturer, we go away and we study and we think about what they have said, particularly, of course, if we have to pass an exam, we often have to do this. And so then as a result, we can get a good intellectual understanding about something. But of course, here in Buddhism, the goal is not simply to have a good intellectual understanding of Buddhist philosophy. That's not really going to help us in our life. What we need to do, of course, is to bring this intellectual understanding into personal experience. And then we can transform our life, we can improve our life. And one of the best ways, of course, to bring intellectual understanding into experience is through meditation. So the third wisdom is the wisdom from meditation. So therefore, in this course, we're combining theory with practice, with meditation. So I'm mainly providing this, and of course you're going to be thinking about and discussing, and then Renato will be helping you to internalize these ideas so that you can come to taste and experience these ideas so that you can really transform your mind and improve your life. Because merely gaining intellectual understanding itself won't transform your life. You can be the smartest Buddhist philosopher in the world and be completely miserable. So we need to bring it into our own experience, then we can make some positive changes in our life. So these are the three wisdoms that we'll be working on, of course, in this retreat, in this course. What I'd like to do now, I don't want to keep you too long, you probably had a long day already, but what I'd like to do, because you're going to start first thing tomorrow morning with meditation, so what I'd like to do is give a little brief introduction into meditation now, so that we have some understanding of meditation when you launch into your first meditation tomorrow morning with Renato. Before I do that, is there any questions about anything here? Meditation, the word meditation, is coming from the Sanskrit word bhavana. So when Buddhism first, of course Buddhism was born here in India 2,500 years ago, and when Buddhism started to spread from India, it spread through two main languages, Pali and Sanskrit. And the Tibetan Buddhism is based on the Sanskrit tradition. So what you'll find is that often in this 10-day course, I'll go back to the original Sanskrit word. Because the Sanskrit terms are very precise in meaning. And often when that word has been translated into English or into Tibetan and then English, often there is no word in English that has the same meaning. And so sometimes the word that's used in English is not very precise, and then we can get some confusion. So a lot of confusion that people have when they first come into Buddhism is simply from terminology, the English words that are used, because they're often not very precise in meaning. So therefore, I often go back to the original Sanskrit word and say what is the meaning of that, so that when you see the English word, you have an understanding what that really means in a Buddhist context. One more thing here too, of course, is particularly for any Hindi speakers, there's a lot of Sanskrit words, of course, in Hindi or very similar. What we need to be careful about is that sometimes these Sanskrit words have changed in meaning. So in modern day Hindi, they don't have the same meaning anymore as the original Sanskrit word from 2,500 years ago. So for any Hindi speakers, also you have to be aware of that. And there are a couple of terms that I'll use where this has happened, where the modern day Hindi word has changed in meaning. So we have to be a bit cautious about that as well. But here, bhavana, the original word, literally means to cultivate, to familiarize. So meditation is the act of cultivating or familiarizing ourselves. And when we talk about meditation, we can talk about many types of meditations. And there are many ways of dividing up meditation. One way, useful way of dividing up all meditations is into two types. So we can talk about two types of meditation, stabilizing meditation and analytical meditation. As the name stabilizing suggests, stabilizing meditation is meditation to help stabilize the mind. Basically to help develop or cultivate a very calm, clear and focused mind. So stabilizing meditation is simply about developing concentration, our ability to focus on an object. Within Buddhism, often what you'll see for this type of meditation It's often called shamatha meditation. Again, Sanskrit word. Shamatha. Shama, you can divide shamatha into two. Shama means non-discursive or calm, meaning a mind that's very calm. And ta means to stay or remain or abide. So shamatha is often translated into English as calm abiding. Abiding. Meaning that we're abiding, we're focusing on a single object, and our mind is very calm, it's not distracted. So often this stabilizing meditation is often simply called shamatha practice. Because shamatha is a particular level of concentration we are trying to develop here. Any of you who have some exposure to Theravada Buddhism, maybe some of you have done the Goenka Vipassana retreat, that's coming from the Theravada Buddhism. In Theravada Buddhism, which includes Sri Lankan Buddhism, Burmese, Thai, and so forth, when they talk about this type of meditation, you won't hear this shamatha word very much. Instead, you'll hear the word dhyana. Again, it's just a particular level of concentration we're developing. But here, within Tibetan Buddhism, when we talk about stabilizing meditation, most commonly you'll hear the word shamatha. Let's do some shamatha practice. So again, shamatha practice is simply to develop our ability to concentrate, to develop a calm, clear, focused mind. And then on the basis of this, we can engage in what's called analytical meditation. And as the word analytical implies, we're analysing, we're investigating. And of course, here, there can be many types of analytical meditations, some involving visualisation and many different types. But within all these analytical meditations, there are two areas of practice that are very important, often called the two wings of practice. And the two wings of practice are wisdom and compassion, or very simply, to develop our heart and our head. Wisdom, often the Sanskrit word for this type of practice is vipassana. Many of you have probably more likely heard the Pali word vipassana. And the Sanskrit is vipassana. They both mean the same thing. In vipassana or vipassana, vi means higher, superior. Passana or passana means to see. So vipassana practice or vipassana practice is higher seeing, superior seeing, usually translated into English as insight, insight into reality. So here, in the wisdom or vipassana practice, we're talking about gaining insight into the nature of reality, gaining an insight into how we exist in the world around us exists. Because from a Buddhist perspective, now we have a false view of reality. We don't clearly understand how we exist in the world around us exists. And that leads to a lot of problems. So one of the main types of analytical meditations, one of the main types of investigation we do, is we do vipassana practice, investigating the nature of reality. How do I exist? How does the world around me exist? So you'll be engaging in some Vipassana practice with Renato, and of course I'll be talking a lot about this practice later in the course. The other main wing of practice is the compassion wing. And here the compassion wing is talking about developing positive qualities, such as loving kindness, compassion, empathetic joy, equanimity, and so forth. So this is developing the positive qualities. And of course, we'll be talking a lot about this wing of practice, and you'll be doing this type of meditation with Renato as well. Of course, there are other analytical meditations that are not wisdom or compassion, and some of those you'll also be doing with Renato. One in particular is you'll be doing what's called a purification meditation, a meditation to help purify our mind of negative habits and negative tendencies. So that's another type of analytical meditation. So there are many. But the main areas of analytical meditation is wisdom and compassion. Any questions about this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you said that the word is insight, why do you call it wisdom in English? Like, if you said that Vipassana is insight.
Right? Yeah. Insight and wisdom more or less mean the same thing in English.
Yeah.
Okay. In fact, this word wisdom here is coming from the Sanskrit word prajna. And prajna means well-knowing, knowing something well. And Vipassana, the etymology is a little bit different, but they're talking about the same thing. Wisdom and insight are talking about realizing nature of reality. They're very similar terms.
Without stabilizing, how can we analyze the second type of the meditation?
I didn't catch the start. What did you say, sorry? Without
stabilizing, how can we implement the second one?
Very good question. In all Buddhist traditions, there's two core practices that all Buddhist traditions talk about: shamatha and vipassana. But if we go around to all the Buddhist traditions and see what they're meditating on, very few, including Tibetan Buddhism, do much of this. In fact, we see a lot of traditions, you know, what are you meditating? Oh, I'm doing Vipassana practice. Oh, I'm doing compassion practice. And they're doing it for 10 years and nothing much has changed. Why? Exactly the question you asked. Because their mind is not very stable, clear and focused. We can spend a lot of time doing these practices and not really get very far, because we sit down to meditate, do our Vipassana practice, then we start thinking about breakfast, or what do I have to do the rest of today, or what am I doing, and we're not focused. It's the same as everything in our life. If we're not focused on anything we do in our life, we're not effective. If we're sort of distracted or half asleep, it's not very effective. So exactly that's the point. That's why it's listed like this, to show this is the basis for this. If we don't put work into this and develop a more calm, more clear and focused mind, then we can put a lot of effort into this and not get very far. So that's a very good question. I'm happy that you brought it up.
Focus on which thing?
That's my next topic. What I'd like to do now, but first some more questions, is how do we do this practice? What do we focus on? And that's what I want to briefly talk about now.
I wanted to ask how can you understand the nature of reality through meditation? Just shortly, like, what does that mean? How can you understand the world around you by sitting with yourself?
If we just sit and do this, we won't. That's why it's analytical. So we have to investigate. by investigating in a very methodical, clear way. And how we do that, I'm going to talk a lot about, well, I think on day six, five or six. So don't worry, I'll give you a lot of explanation about how we do that. How do we go about, through meditation, gaining an insight into reality? So that's coming down the track a little bit. And you're right, of course, if we just sit there and have a very calm mind, I don't think we're going to have an insight into reality, because we're not investigating. Well, that's what I'm going to talk about. Yeah. I mean, it's the same idea, is that like if we've got a problem to solve, then usually we go through some step-by-step way of trying to solve the problem, yeah? And then at the end, we go, oh, there's a solution. So it's similar to that. We have a step-by-step method to investigate, and then at the end we go, oh, it's like that. But how we do that, I'll talk about later.
But let's say the loving kindness analytical, mm-hmm. wouldn't you simultaneously focus on the object which is loving kindness?
Yes.
But simultaneously yeah. you're doing both.
Right. Exactly. So what we're doing is, with a calm, clear mind, we either investigate how things exist, or we investigate ourselves and other people, what sort of situation we're in. And then the goal of this is to come to some insight. The goal of this is to transform our mind into a mind of love or compassion. Then we hold that. So once we've done the investigation and we come up and then we generate a mind of love or compassion, we hold that with this. You stop investigating and you just sit with that and allow it to penetrate deeper in the mind. Similarly with the Vipassana, if we've gone through some investigation and we've come to some insight, then we just hold that and we allow it to permeate, penetrate deeper into the mind. So then the insight or the compassion becomes the object that we just hold after we've finished our investigation. So we're sort of combining the two in that way. Very good question. Okay. What I'd like to do briefly now is talk about the stabilizing meditation, the shamatha practice, because this is the type of practice that you're going to be doing with Renato every morning before breakfast. And then in the afternoon and evening sessions with Renato, you'll be doing more this analytical meditation, either a Vipassana, compassion, purification, and there's a couple of other meditations as well. But generally, these are the meditations you'll be doing in the afternoon and evening, and the shamatha in the morning before breakfast. So I'd like to just briefly introduce this practice, some basics of the practice, so that you have some idea when you go into the meditation tomorrow morning. So, shamatha practice. So again, shamatha, translated into English, is calm abiding. Shamatha practice is a stabilizing meditation. It's basically to develop single-pointed concentration, our ability to focus on an object in a very clear way without becoming distracted. So we're just developing concentration in this practice. So first, what qualities are we developing in this practice? So we said that this is a stabilizing meditation. So we want to develop a stable mind, a mind that can focus without becoming distracted. So the first quality we are cultivating in this practice is stability. The fault that we're trying to overcome is distraction, becoming distracted. So we're trying to have a stable mind so we can focus on an object without becoming distracted. But also, we want to be able to focus on that object in a very clear way. So the second quality is clarity. And so the fault that we're trying to overcome there is dullness. So some of you maybe meditated, maybe you've experienced a little bit of those. You know, we're trying to meditate on something and then we get distracted. Or we're trying to meditate and our mind becomes very dull and maybe we even fall asleep in the middle of the meditation. So these are the two faults that we're trying to overcome. So we're trying to cultivate a stable mind and a clear mind. But I like to add a third quality that normally is not mentioned in the meditation texts. Because I think centuries ago, this wasn't really a problem or an issue. But I think it really is in our modern society. And that the very first quality we need to cultivate in the shamatha practice is relaxation. And unfortunately, many of us in our modern society have forgotten how to relax. Because in our modern society, we tend to lead very hectic, fast-paced lives, constantly bombarded by stimulus. We tend to be very agitated, very tense. And then, of course, what is our normal way of focus? Whenever we want to focus on an object or task, what do? We tense. Because if we don't tense, we feel like we're going to get... Because our mind is so chaotic, if we don't tense, we get distracted. So whenever we do that, we tense. And sometimes we even end up holding our breath. We're so tense. If we only want to focus for a short time, that can sort of work. But we know from our own experience, if we focus with a lot of tension for a longer time, we become completely exhausted and we often become very agitated. So this is not the way we want to practice meditation at all. So the very first thing we need to do in this practice is we need to learn how to relax. So the fault we're trying to overcome is tension. And as a beginner in meditation, the most common reason we have difficulty in our meditation as a beginner is this: tension. We're simply too tense, we're too tight, we're simply trying too hard. And we're going to have all sorts of troubles if we meditate like this. So really, the first thing we need to do, and this is something I emphasize a lot, and I think the first few mornings with Renato, he's also going to be emphasizing relax, 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 relax. Relaxing the body, relaxing the mind. Because unless you have a relaxed body and a relaxed mind, there's no way you're going to develop a stable and clear mind. It's just not going to work. You're just going to get exhausted. You know, sometimes people even complain about getting headaches from meditating. I mean, it's way, way, way too tense. So we just need to chill. Relax, relax, relax. In fact, that reminds me of a story. Some years ago, I was following here in India, a program by one of the well-known Tibetan masters. And he had a lot of disciples. And he was also leading meditation. And we'd have like 300 people in the room. And when he was leading the meditation, often, you know, he'd see people in the meditation sort of going like this. You know, like nearly falling asleep. And at the end, he would often comment, "Very good, very good." Because at least he knew these people weren't tight and tense. So Really, I mean, that's what we really need to do. The first thing we need to do, if all you can do in this whole 10 days in meditation is relax a little bit, great success. Really, great success. Because if we don't have a relaxed body and mind, we won't be able to do this practice. We won't be able to do any meditation practice. Our default mode is when we're focused, we're tense. And when we're relaxed, we're sort of half asleep. So what we want to do is combine those two. We want to be relaxed and alert. So that's something new that we have to cultivate. We're not familiar with being relaxed and clear. But that's what we're trying to do in this meditation. Question.
So you would recommend when we're too tired to do first a separate relaxation session and then meditation?
I'll answer that by...
Because sometimes found out I came to a way of meditating because I was very, very tired and then I wanted to have relaxation through meditation, so I did a bit both.
Exactly. I'm going to answer your question right now because the next presentation will answer your question. How can we... And we're not talking about developing that before we begin shamatha practice. We're talking about in shamatha practice, the first thing we do is we emphasize this. So we're actually meditating, shamatha meditation, working on this first. In fact, we need to work on them in this order. First, we work on, in shamatha practice, becoming relaxed. When we're more relaxed, then we stabilize the mind. When we're more stable, then we work on improving clarity in this order. So, of course, there are things we can do outside of meditation to relax as well. But here we're talking about how to work on that in the meditation itself. And I'm going to talk about that next. Any questions? I think the question from before was, in this practice, what should we focus on? So in this practice, we're developing concentration. So we're simply focusing on a single object and trying to hold that focus, to cultivate that ability. But the question is, what object should we focus on? The simple answer is, use the object that works best for you. And in the meditation text, it gives a list this long of possible objects to use. But within that list, often they say, if you're the sort of person who's highly discursive, meaning always thinking, 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 then definitely the best object for you is the breath. And so I think that accounts for about 95% of the modern day population. We're all living in the head, OCD, obsessive compulsive thinking, going round and round and round and round and round. If that's us, and that's probably 95% of the people in this room, best object, the breath. So, of course, here we're talking about focusing on the physical sensations of the breath. And in the breath practice, we have a number of variations. There's what's called the full body breath practice. What that means is to just focus on the sensations of the breath anywhere in the body, wherever you notice any sensations associated with the breathing. Could be in the abdomen, stomach, chest, throat, nostrils, anywhere in this area. Whenever you notice any sensations associated with the breathing. And this is particularly good for relaxation. Because the object is very diffuse. And If you're finding that you have a lot of agitation and tension, this is a very good practice to relax, particularly together with the Shavasana, the corpse posture that probably many of you have done in yoga. That is a valid posture for meditation, particularly if we're the type of person who's very tight, very tense. That may actually be the best posture for meditation when we go home. Here we don't have much space for that. Because the Shavasana, lying flat on your back, hands to the side, is very relaxing on the body. So if you, again, if you're the sort of person very agitated and tense and you can't relax in meditation, I would suggest using this posture. Lie on your bed, on your back, focusing on the breath anywhere in the body, just emphasizing relaxation, relaxation, relaxation. Very good practice. Another variation of the breath practice is to focus on the breath in the area of the abdomen, the rising and lowering of the abdomen as you breathe. Emphasized in many, particularly of the Theravada Buddhist traditions, focusing here. This is quite easy to focus on. So this is particularly good for stabilizing the mind, for developing stability. Because we're bringing the attention down. And then the third variation of breath practice is to focus at the entrance of the nostrils. Again, many Buddhist traditions emphasize this practice, focusing on the sensations of breath here at the entrance of the nostrils. This, because it's a much smaller object, and we're elevating our attention, we're bringing our attention up, this is very good for improving clarity, for making the mind more clear. So over the first, I think, 4 or 5 days of this retreat, because this is probably the object that's going to be the best for many of us, we're going to work with the breath, I think, for 4 or 5 days with Renato in the morning. So then tomorrow morning he's going to really work on just the full body, really emphasizing relaxation, because relaxation is the basis of everything else. Then moving on, I think, the next day to working with the abdomen. And then after that, I think maybe spending even 2 days working at the nostrils over the next couple of days in this retreat, in this course. Any questions about the breath?
At the full body, do you focus like every moment on like one specific feeling or all the body at once?
Well, it's not anywhere in the body. It's any sensations associated with the breathing. So when you're breathing, you may notice something happening in the abdomen, the stomach, chest, here. And you can move around. You don't have to stay here or here. Wherever you notice any sensations in this area, you just go there and relax.
And what meditation can you focus on all? I mean, like, say you flow from one to the other.
This is something I want to talk about later in detail, but the brief answer here is when we're doing this shamatha practice, not only use the object that works best for you, but stay with the same object. Meaning, if you keep changing every session or even in between in the session, you keep changing what you're focusing on. There's an English expression, you become the jack of all trades and the master of none. Meaning you won't really go very deep into the practice if you keep changing the object. Having said that, let's say you like this practice, the nostrils, and that's your normal practice. And let's say one day you're going into the practice, but you're agitated and tense, and you can't relax. Then there's no point in continuing here if you're very tense, because this can make you even more tense. Then what you can do is, if you can't relax, you can go to there for some minutes to relax. Once you relax, then go back here. So that's okay. But just to keep changing is counterproductive.
You mentioned about the full body breathing, but like for me, it sounds like only this part.
Yeah, it's anywhere in this area.
Not
yeah. No, it's not. Well, if you notice sensations here because of your breath, then that's okay. But generally, you don't tend to notice sensations in the arm because of your breathing. But usually anywhere in this area, you can have sensations associated with the breathing. Okay. So that's the object you'll be working on for at least, I think, 4 days in this retreat.
I'm piggybacking on this question. So I'm apprehensive a couple of times.
I'm apprehensive
that my sensations could be imaginary because they don't seem. It doesn't seem realistic.
What doesn't seem realistic?
Your breath in different parts of the body.
But when you're breathing, your chest is moving, your stomach's moving, your abdomen's moving. There's something happening in your throat, all this area. So whatever you notice, that's okay.
It could be anything. It could be any size.
Sure. Again. For this one, the emphasis is on just relaxation. Yeah. So that's the emphasis. So
you're just telling yourself and you're just trying to keep convincing yourself to relax. Does that work?
Well, it's not a matter of convincing yourself. It's just a matter of relaxing, you know. It's just, so again, if we find ourselves very agitated and tense, this practice, particularly lying down, can be very helpful. Very helpful. That's all.
This is like the third object, like nostrils, is the highest object. So is it the aim to focus when you
not really
for the rest of life? Is it the aim to focus on nostrils or
no? You can, and in some Buddhist traditions, when they talk about this practice, you won't hear them talk about that. They just talk about this, and with this you can go all the way. What I'm saying is that the nostrils, because it's a more subtle object, makes it easier to develop clarity. But of course, it's also easier to get tense.
But also get some stability?
Sure.
Through nostrils.
But here, of course, as a beginner, because it's so subtle, sometimes people don't pick up anything. So then where's the stability if you don't notice anything? So if you don't notice anything, then, you know, we maybe need to start here or something. But yeah, I mean, we can use those depending on what works best for us. And you may find that actually this works better than this.
Yes, exactly, because I did it for 3 years, only abdomen,
sure.
And then I did Vipassana, and then only nostrils, and
yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, if this works better than this, then just stay there. You don't have to sort of go, you don't have to end up here.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
The breathing practice is the same as in yoga, or it's different?
So here, we're stomach practice. When we're focusing on the sensations of the breath, one thing that's very important is not to manipulate the breath. Of course, there are many practices like pranayama, where we do breath manipulation, and they have their purpose and they have benefit. But here in shamatha practice, we don't want to manipulate the breath. The goal here is not to make our breathing rhythmic, shallow, subtle. We're not trying to do anything with the breath at all. Just let the breath do its own thing. Because often what happens is people do this. They try to make their breathing more subtle, less, and they're doing that, and all of a sudden they go, because they're not getting enough air in the body. So we don't want to manipulate the breath here. Just whatever the breathing is doing, if it's rough, it's rough. If it's shallow, it's shallow. If it's deep, it's deep. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What you will find, of course, is as the mind calms down, the breathing starts to calm down as well. But that's a natural side effect of the mind being calm. We're not trying to do something with the breath. So that's very important. Okay. Also in this course, we're going to focus on two other objects that I think can be very beneficial for us in our modern society in particular. The second object is the mind itself. And that is to focus on our own mind as the object. So here, we're just focusing on our own mind, observing our own mind. So we're like being the observer or witness of our own mind. And we're observing our own mind and whatever's coming up in the mind. Thoughts, emotions, memories, and so forth. And we're just observing whatever arises in our mind without following it, without trying to get rid of it. Simply observing thoughts and emotions and so forth arise and pass, arise and pass. In our modern society, of course, many of us have obsessive compulsive thinking. A thought comes up, an emotion comes up, a memory comes up. What do? We latch onto it, we follow it. We get caught up in our stories. We often get overwhelmed by our stories. And then, of course, if something comes up that's unpleasant and we don't know how to deal with it, what do? Stuff it down, suppress it. Of course, that doesn't deal with it. All it does is that negative, and usually it's negative thoughts, emotions, and memories that we try to suppress. All that happens is it manifests as physical illness, physical problems in the body. I think a lot of modern day physical illness is suppressed mental content. And then we project a lot of this negativity onto the people around us. Like if we have, for example, an anger issue and we don't know how to deal with it and we suppress it, that often manifests as problems in the neck and shoulder areas, stiff neck, headaches and so forth. And then also, because we're suppressing it, we're denying it, but we can still feel it, but then we project it. Oh yes, it's anger, but it's not me, it's them. They're the angry ones. Because we disown it, we project it. So we often, in our modern society, we are the slaves of our mind. We're tormented by our own mind. Often our own mind is our worst enemy. In this practice, observing the mind in shamatha practice, we can make our mind our best friend. Because if we can simply observe our mind and whatever's coming up without getting caught up in it, without suppressing it, if we just watch it arise and pass, then the habit of this stuff coming up will get less and less and less. Because every time you follow a thought, a memory or emotion, or you try to suppress it, you're feeding it, which means more and more and more will come up. So we don't have to fight with our mind. If you have ever had to fight with your mind, it's like throwing petrol on the fire. We lose. We just suffer more. We don't need to fight with our mind. We just step back and watch. That's all we got to do. And then we're not feeding it. So all this garbage coming up is not being fed. So it'll, over time, we'll get less and less and less. Our mind will naturally become quiet and still. And then, because we're in the habit of being able to observe without getting caught up, in future, if some strong thought, emotional memory were to arise, we could simply be present with it without it overwhelming us. Because if we look at what a thought, emotional memory is, it's virtually nothing. From its own side, it has no power to harm us. Thoughts, emotions, and memories only have power if we give them power. And we give them power by identifying with them or trying to suppress them. So if we do this practice, and many people find this very challenging because our very strong habit is always to follow or to suppress. But if we can do this practice and get in the habit of just observing without following or suppressing, we will become the masters of our mind.
What do you mean by following?
Following means a thought comes up and then we get caught up in it. We get caught up in a story. You know, a thought comes and then we entertain it, we go with it.
Similar question, but could you maybe be more specific about what you mean by identifying with the thought?
Well, identifying means to just get caught up in it. It's like the analogy is we can often use the analogy like the mind is like a stage and the thoughts and emotions are like actors on the stage. So now there's a play going on in our mind, a movie. And we can step back and we can enjoy the movie, or we can get caught up in the movie and get overwhelmed by it. So that's what it means is, generally, of course we need to think, but then we're in control. We direct. Usually when we get caught up, we're out of control because our thoughts and emotions have got hold of us and we're out of control and they overwhelm us. You know, often all this stuff's going on in our mind and we don't particularly want it, do we? That's what it means to get caught up. It's just going, and we're sort of get taken along for the ride, and often we don't like the ride. Yeah.
Would it also mean putting your thoughts into action?
What do
you identifying with your thoughts, can it also mean putting the thoughts into action?
Well, we often put thoughts into action, whether we're in control or out of control. So the idea here is for us to be in control, and therefore we can use thoughts in a constructive way to put it into action in a constructive way, rather than get caught up in our emotions and go into action by anger, jealousy, and we're out of control. That's not very helpful to us.
Yeah. You said now anger and jealousy, which are negative stuff. We can also get caught in, in positive thoughts of our mind, or would that be okay?
To get caught up would mean that we're polluting them.
Okay.
But we're going to talk more about this later. This is coming later. So I think we're now going into a lot of material that we're going to be covering later. So if it's specifically about this, okay. But otherwise, I'm going to talk a lot about mental afflictions and how to deal with them, and that's all coming down the track.
Yeah.
A lot of time, observing and repressing feels very similar, like the
observing,
when you're trying to ignore something, it feels very similar to
suppressing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but here we're not talking about ignoring. In this practice, we are 100% present. It's like the analogy, we are 100% present watching the play, watching the movie. We're right there. But we know it's a play, we know it's a movie. We're not trying to, like, do this. That's suppressing. So we're not talking about ignoring here. We are 100% present.
Do you suggest labeling with saying, oh, this is an angry thought? Or
this is something I'm going to talk about later, but yes, that's one thing we can do to help avoid getting caught up is to give it a name. But we're going to talk about that later. Yes.
That's a helpful thing.
Yeah, it's a very helpful thing.
In my mind, if you refer to our thoughts and emotions as if they're actors in a play, but are they? I mean, maybe that's confusing to me because they're my thoughts and my emotions, and like I don't understand exactly how you can separate them from me. Like, what is observing the thought and the emotion? Like, what am I who's looking at? What am I if I'm not like
that? Well, brief answer. I'm going to talk about that I'm going to spend the whole day on the Vipassana, and we're going to talk about how we exist, who is me. So that's coming day 6, I think. The brief answer now is, do you have a body? Right. So if you have a body, you can't be the body. You can't have something and be it. So you have a body, correct? We don't want to get philosophical here, just simple. You have a body, so you can't be the body.
I also have a body.
You can't have something and be it. It's impossible. And either you have a mind or you are the mind. We have a mind, so we can't be the mind. So we're not the mind, we're not the body, because we have a body, we have a mind. So that's the short answer. The long answer is coming down the track. Okay.
Just a question here, a practical question. So when you're observing the mind, sometimes, I don't know if it's right or wrong, but is it okay to tell, to speak to yourself and say, just watch it?
Yeah.
While, like, is it okay to
have that conversation with those states.
With all of these practices, as a beginner, we need to understand what we need to do. So sometimes as a beginner, a little bit of commentary is helpful. Otherwise we forget what we're supposed to do. It's a bit like the example of learning to drive a car. You know, when we're learning to drive a car, we have this commentary. Okay, I have to remind to look in the mirror. I have to do this. I have to push that down. I have to push that. If we didn't do that, we'd be lost because we don't know, because we have to. But imagine now if you drive the car well. Do you do that now when you drive? No, it's just automatic. So similarly here, as a beginner, sometimes it's helpful to have a bit of commentary. Okay, now I should be doing this, I should be doing that. Keep it simple. But also when you're learning to drive a car, if it makes it too much, you get overwhelmed. But if you keep some little bit of simple commentary about what we're supposed to be doing to remind us is helpful, but then it becomes automatic and we don't need to do that. Because if we keep doing that, it really becomes a nuisance, an obstacle. But as a beginner, it can be helpful. A little bit, not too much. Okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's not that related to this topic, but I just wonder. I also tried the Vipassana before, and I think I have a kind of understanding about observing.
About observing?
Yeah. I presume that, but at the same time, you said we have to think. Of course, we have to think.
In daily life.
Yeah, in daily life to be
to function.
Person. But I feel like I spend a lot of time to just observe myself, so I don't have enough time to think about my future, and it's not gonna give my. I cannot really live in this moment because I think I'm living in this moment, so I cannot go further. You know?
Yeah. Maybe this is something I'm going to talk about more about later. So the brief answer, of course, is yes. Of course, we need to be in the present moment. But also we need to have some framework in terms of the direction we're following in our life. Yeah. If we don't have that, we can be in the present moment and just be sort of doing this. Yeah. So we need a combination. We need to have a framework and a direction for our life, and that often involves thinking and contemplating to develop that. But then, of course, the only time we can implement that is in the present moment. So if we keep thinking and doing and living in the future, we never get an opportunity to go there. So we need both together. But I'm going to talk more about that later. Right, the last point, and then we'll finish. There is what's called sometimes shamatha with no object, or sometimes it's called awareness of awareness. And in this practice, we're simply being aware of being aware. Now, when we're, you know, focusing, for example, on this pen, explicitly, we're aware of the pen. Implicitly, we are aware of being aware of the pen. You know, I'm being aware of the pen. It's implicit. So in this practice, we're simply knowing that we're aware. We're just being aware of being aware. Many people find this very challenging. Not because it's complicated, but because it's too simple. Because this virtually means doing nothing at all. We don't know how to do nothing at all. We always want to do something. So when this practice is explained, people often ask, but what am I supposed to do? That's the problem. Doing is the problem. This practice is about being. Being present, being aware of just being aware. That's it. It's so simple. That's why it's difficult, because we don't know how to do that, because we have this obsession with doing. We don't know how to be. And in our modern society, this doing often means we get stressed, we just go round and round and round and round. So this practice is so beneficial in our modern society,
because we can rest in awareness itself. And what we notice, if we just rest in being aware, what we notice is that our mind is completely still and it's completely spacious. It has no boundary. And if we can rest in that experience, we can rest in that stillness and get used to that and still engage in the world. And by resting in that stillness of our mind, we can intuitively come to some insight into the nature of our mind. So it's a very much a bridge into the Vipassana practice. This is very well known, even though it's just a shamatha practice, this is very well known for intuitively, spontaneously gaining an insight into the nature of our mind, which is Vipassana practice. So we're also going to be doing this practice in the morning. So with Renato first, I think 4 days here, 2 days here and 2 days here, something like that, roughly. So we're going to go through those in the coming days with Renato in the morning.
The no object, sometimes we're doing meditation, we're trying to be aware of sounds around, the river, the birds, and would that be a no object? Because
no.
I'm aware of...
Now that's sometimes, let's use some different names, that sometimes it's called open awareness.
Okay.
So in that we're being aware of everything, anything that arises. In this practice...
It also brings to relaxation and stability.
Sure. I mean, all of these practices bring to the same result. Here, in this practice, we're not interested in any appearance at all. Nothing. We're not trying to block appearances, but we're not paying attention to any appearance. We're simply being aware of being aware. Of course, sounds and thoughts and stuff will keep coming up. We just... forget about it. We just ignore it. And we just rest in that experience. That's it. It's so simple. And what I find is that, I mean, out of all this, personally, this is my favourite. And what I find is that more and more people in the modern society really like this practice. Because one thing is that often by just resting in that experience of awareness, it feels like coming home. Because here, we are approximating the nature of our mind, who we really the nature of ourself. And so it feels very much like we connect with something. So a lot of people really resonate with this practice, so we'll practice it in this course. Okay, let's leave it there. We've sort of run out of time. So just one or two more points, and then we'll finish this evening very quickly. About the meditation, and again, tomorrow morning when you start with Renato, of course, he's going to, particularly in tomorrow morning session, talk a little bit about things like the posture, how to set up a good posture and so forth. And also he'll probably give some advice as well, but just one or two pieces of advice I'd like to give as well that you may find helpful. Again, like I said right at the beginning, in your meditation sessions, relax, relax, relax. The more you can relax, the better it will go. And drop all expectations. If you have any expectation of having some sort of experience or getting some sort of result, that's just going to block you. You're just going to get frustrated. So if you notice any expectation coming up, particularly, oh, I think my meditation will be as good as it was yesterday, probably better. If you have that expectation, you're just setting yourself up for a lot of frustration. So any expectation of getting any sort of experience, just drop it, drop it, drop it. Drop all expectations. Whatever happens is okay. Then, and relax, your meditation will go well. Even if it doesn't go well, it's okay. But if you get tight and tense and have this striving, I've got to get something, I've got to get something, I've got to try, I've got to try, you're just going to have a lot of problems in your practice. So relax and drop all expectation. Now, even in this introductory course, even if you've never meditated before, you may have some sort of experiences coming up, physical, mental experiences. Same advice is if you have any experience coming up in meditation, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or strange, don't get caught up in it. Because often what people do is if they have some pleasant experience, they go, wow, that's so nice. I like that. I want that. I want that. And then we try to recreate it, and of course immediately it goes, and then we just get frustrated and frustrated and frustrated. So just let that go. If we have some unpleasant or strange experience, often people go, oh, what's that? I don't like that. Go away. And so we develop aversion, and then that just makes a big thing out of it. So whatever happens, let it go, let it go, let it go. Don't get caught up in your experiences. If there is a certain experience that you're having in every meditation and you're not sure what it means, then at the end of a meditation session you can talk to Renato about that. Maybe you've got some strange ray of the posture that's causing some physical sensations in the body or something. But what you'll find is these experiences will come and they'll go. They'll come and they'll go. Just leave them, let them go, let them go, let them go. Don't get caught up in them. And so that's all I wanted to mention, and I'm sure Renato will also mention a few things in the coming days as well. So the very last point, actually 2 points, sorry. of course, Kunpen's mentioned that we're doing this course in silence, and she's probably mentioned some benefits of that. So the silence starts now, once we've just finished here and we walk out the door. So I'd just like to add a couple of things for that. Many people comment at the end of this course that silence was one of the best things in the whole course. Because if we really maintain this silence, we're not only going to get the most out of this course, we're going to get the most benefit from the teachings and the meditations, but also we get a chance to really start to know ourselves much better. We even can get, it's very common to even get some little insights into our life in this course, if we stay quiet. If we start talking, of course, we disperse that, we lose that opportunity. Of course, then we spoil it for the people around us as well. So I really encourage you to really maintain that silence. Of course, every day in discussion group, you'll be discussing for an hour. And in my classes, of course, you're quite welcome to ask questions. But outside of that, maintain that silence and you really will get the most out of this course. And actually, it's extremely rare in our modern society to have this sort of opportunity. We never even have an opportunity to be silent for one day in our life, let alone 8 or 9 days of our life. So really, I encourage you to maintain that silence. You really will get the most out of this course. And then the very last point is, as I said, we'll be following more or less the structure in this booklet. So tomorrow, if you want to read up a little bit before the class, we'll be covering page 1, 2 and 3. So 1, 2 and 3 in your booklet we'll be looking at tomorrow. Also in the afternoon, we'll be looking a little bit at the mind, which is on page 16. And then, of course, this evening we talked a little bit about meditation, you know, stabilising and analytical meditation. So there's a little bit more extensive explanation of that also on page 16, 17, 18 and 19. So a little bit more about meditation there. So again, the topics for tomorrow, page 1 to 3 and page 16. Okay. Any last question? Otherwise, we'll finish there. Yes.
Instead of giving up expectation, you mean only on like the experience I'm supposed to have in this specific meditation? Or like expectation from what meditation you hold supposed to give me on the long run? Which one do I need to give up?
I mean, in general, see, there's a difference between, of course, we need a framework, we need a goal that we're trying to achieve. So we need to know what we're trying to do and where we're trying to go. But then within that, we just work in the present moment as best we can, and whatever happens is okay. If we're expecting to have some sort of experience, expecting to make progress, we're just going to get obstacles and frustrated. So it's actually going to stop us from progressing if we have expectation. Of course, we need to evaluate, after the meditation, we need to evaluate our meditation, whether we're still doing the meditation properly or we need to adjust our meditation so that we're doing it correctly. But if we can just drop all expectation, it'll go much better, much better. Right. Yeah. I mean, of course, for these two practices, we can breathe through the mouth. This might be a bit difficult. So, I mean, if we're doing this practice, then we really need to breathe through the nose. But again, we don't have to be doing, when we go home, we don't have to do this as our shamatha practice. But for these practices, of course, doesn't matter if we're breathing through the mouth. And sometimes even what you find, sometimes I find in the explanation of this, particularly this practice, sometimes the explanation talks about breathing through your mouth. Because here we're not interested in the breath anyway. So it's only really this one where not breathing through the nose might be a little bit problematic. But the rest, no problem. Okay. Yeah. Let's leave it there then. So have a nice evening. And Renato, I'll see you tomorrow morning at 6:45, and I'll see you at 9 o'clock. Enjoy the course.